is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
The other big thing, obviously, is the relationships. You know, being around the guys and after big wins, putting a smile on their face. You know, and you talked about on the podcast a couple times just how important it is to take moments sometimes and laugh. You know, when things are funny. You know, because it's serious practice, but you know, at the end of the day, you're getting education. We're enjoying our time playing basketball. You know, so just being around the game and being around the guys, that's really what I enjoy most.
Coach Mark Schultz is in his second season as an assistant coach for Clark State Community College in Springfield, Ohio. Mark has coached AAU for Shining Stars in Cincinnati for 5 years and Heart Over Height Hoops for 1 year. He also served as a student assistant coach for Wittenberg University in 2016 and 17. Coach Schultz played high school basketball at Covington Catholic High School for Scott Roussatz. He was a captain on the school's first state championship team his senior year. After high school, he played 2 seasons at Wittenberg University for head coach Bill Brown. His responsibilities for the Clark State Eagles reach all parts of the program, including defensive scheme work, recruiting, scouting reports, team logistics, social media marketing, and academic support. He's in charge of the team's film and heavily involved with the skill development of the guards. Coach Schultz is a native of Edgewood, Kentucky, and graduated with a Bachelor of Arts degree in Accounting and Finance from Wittenberg University in 2018. He is an experienced graphic designer and publishes MarkSchultzGetAhead.com, in addition to many other charitable websites. He is currently pursuing his master's degree in accounting and hopes to attain his CPA. Big thanks to those of you that have left us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, or wherever you listen to the Hoopheads podcast. If you haven't left a review yet, please consider doing so as it helps us to grow the show and continue to provide you with access to great people from across the basketball landscape. Be prepared to take down some notes as you listen to this episode with Coach Mark Schultz from Clark State Community College in Springfield, Ohio.
Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome to the podcast from Clark State, Mark Schultz. Mark, welcome.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We want to thank you, first of all, for reaching out. You're one of our only guests, or our first guest, I guess, that has reached out to us directly via the web and email. And now we've had an opportunity to get you on the show and talk to you, pick your brain a little bit about what you are doing now at Clark State as, according to our crack research staff, you are the youngest coach currently in college basketball.
Yeah, to my knowledge, I am. That's right.
All right. Well, we're going to get into that a little bit as we get into the podcast. Want to go backwards a little bit in time and talk to you about your first experiences with the game of basketball. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you got into the game as a kid and what made you fall in love with the game of basketball?
Yeah, sure. Like many of your listeners probably know, I'm a lot younger than a lot of the coaches on here. So I kind of feel like I was, you know, the next generation down. Maybe I was the last of the generations to get any playing outside with all the technology. But, you know, I grew up, you know, just playing in the driveway for the most part. You know, when I was with my friends, we'd go, you know, there was a group of four. So it's either 2-on-2. Playing 3 guys to 21, or, you know, the two of us that are there are playing 1-on-1. You know, so doing that and, you know, playing in the driveway and learning to, you know, to compete really and toughness, you know, you get some of that there playing outdoors. And then really the toughness part mostly would come from playing with my older brothers. Same thing, you know, I'm the youngest of 3 boys. All 3 of us played at Covington Catholic. So basketball was always, you know, always something growing up in my household, and playing with them was kind of what pushed me, you know, to kind of notice that, hey, I'm tall and I could be pretty decent at this game. You know, so that's kind of what drew me into it. I was just a young kid. I was good at it. It wasn't until I got to high school, that I really started to fall in love with the game. You know, at some point, sophomore year, I think it was summer going into sophomore year, we had just gotten a new coach, Scott Roussatz, guest a few weeks ago, and you know, somewhere along that timeline, I it hit me that, you know, it's not about just just playing every day and having fun. It's about trying to improve every day, you know, and going as hard as you can and finding different ways, you know, to contribute to the team and improve your game overall. So my sophomore year of high school is really when my passion for basketball took off.
What do you remember about Coach Rusatz the first time that he came in? Because obviously he's had a tremendous amount of success there at Covington Catholic. So can you think back to that time, what your first sort of your first impression of him was when he came in and you got to meet him for the first time?
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing. I was nervous, you know, being a sophomore in school. I still remember, you know, I had an AAU conflict. I grew up in Northern Kentucky, played on Shining Stars, an AAU team based out of Cincinnati. And that year I was playing on a Cincinnati team. So for how the AAU circuit with that works is the Ohio State tournament is the first week of June. But in Kentucky, you know, that first week of June is just as good as the regular season with the Kentucky rules. You know, so I was so scared. I'm going to miss. He's going to think I'm not committed. I found his email online and met him June 1st and just told him the situation. And, you know, he was just so thrilled, I think, that I was honest about it, that he's like, you know, yeah, you know, as long as you're playing, you're active, you're playing AAU, go do that, you know, and then when you're not there, be here. So I, you know, despite my nerves at first, I think I had a great, you know, first impression and start to our relationship. And, you know, from there, that kind of set the tone. Just I'm always going to be working hard is kind of the message I was trying to send. And he said, you know, great. You know, let's be honest and open when we communicate.
Yeah, I think if you start off with honesty, that's always a good way to start building that relationship. I want to go back to something you said about playing on the AAU team in Cincinnati. And one of the things we talked to Coach Rusatz about was the difference in the rules between the state of Kentucky and the state of Ohio. So, you know, in Ohio, you get your 10 contact days, and in Kentucky, you can basically work with your players year round. So how is that different? Did you ever talk to or kind of compare notes with some of the kids who were on your team that were Ohio high school players compared to you being in Kentucky, or was that something that you guys didn't really discuss? I mean, I just think it would be different in terms of the amount of work that you could get in with your high school coach compared to a kid in Ohio.
Sure. Yeah, it got brought up a little bit. You know, we had guys that year from six or seven different schools, you know, all in Cincinnati. One guy was from Dayton. You know, from what I remember, it's probably sad, but not all schools, you know, can just be hands-on. I remember some of the guys said they would do, you know, groups of four for 30 or 45 minutes at a time, and that was kind of all they could get. You know, but most of my teammates from Ohio, they couldn't believe it when I tell them, like, you know, yeah, we've got 2 weeks off in June, and other than that, we're always doing something, you know, whether it's skill work, whether it's open gyms or conditioning at 6:30 in the morning. Like, we were always doing something. Which, you know, with the success we had and that they have, it shows that, you know, when you have a hands-on coaching staff that cares and really invests in it, you know, it leads to success most of the time.
Yeah. I don't think there's any doubt that one of the things that we've learned over the course of the last, whatever, 8 months, 10 months, however long we've been doing this thing, that the most successful coaches, the guys that really have the type of success that other coaches look at and maybe envious of, it doesn't come by accident. It comes through hard work and putting in time, whether it's, you know, in the gym, whether it's with conditioning, whether it's just building relationships with their players. And I think that, you know, obviously the rules in Kentucky allow you to expand on that even more, depending on what state you're in. Obviously you're under the auspices of those high school federations, but still, no matter where you are, no matter what the rules are, the coaches that put the time in and put the hard work in, you know, are the ones that end up being successful. So if you think back to that time when you were at Covington Catholic, what's your favorite memory from your time as a high school basketball player?
Without question, a winning state. You know, we were the first school, or I'm sorry, first team in school history to win a state championship. As you know, in Kentucky, you know, the the basketball is not divided into classes. You know, everybody's in one tournament. There's only one team that can leave as a champion. That was definitely the highlight. It's kind of funny. Like I mentioned before, you know, growing up, being the youngest of three boys, two of which played at Covington Catholic, you know, that was what we were idolizing. That is a big deal in that community. And I remember my senior year, just when we got to Rupp, you know, not even winning the state championship, I thought that, you know, just getting there was an accomplishment. And, you know, that was one of the things that I really took away from my high school experience was that, you know, if you're going to do something, you need to do it all the way. And you can't be satisfied with anything less. You know, obviously you can recognize milestones and accomplishments. But, you know, if you're not trying to win the whole thing, then what's the point of coming out?
Yeah, I think you want to get after it and try to win. Anybody who's competitive certainly would feel that way. I have two questions to follow up on what you just said. One is, when you go into the state tournament, how many teams are there when you start out in Kentucky, just to give people kind of a frame of reference of how many games you got to win and what that gauntlet looks like? So how many teams start out, or how many games you have to win a state title?
Sure. So there's so how it's broken down, there's 264 teams. I think about, if I remember correctly, 56 or 64, somewhere in that range, that many districts. And then those, I guess it would be 64 districts make up 16 regions. You know, that middle number might be off, but, and then those 16 regional winners, go play the whole Sweet 16, you know, so four games at Rupp Arena. To get to Rupp Arena, you'd have to finish in the top two in your district. You know, so two rounds of district and then three rounds in the region tournament and then four wins, at Rupp Arena. So in total, I think we, ended with, what was it? Seven straight wins to win the title.
Gotcha. Yeah. That's a lot of wins. Although I'm sure at the initial rounds, you're probably, you know, if you're one of the better teams in the state, you're probably not playing. I'm assuming that through the seeding process that the first game or two probably are not, you know, opponents that you really were, again, every coach is worried about every opponent, but you get what I'm saying. I'm sure that those first couple games maybe weren't as challenging as some of the ones in the later rounds.
Right, right. They, you know, our district opponents were very familiar with. Absolutely.
So the other thing I wanted to ask you about is, and this is something that people a lot of times would ask me as a player, was, you know, you're obviously, as a high school player, used to playing in front of, you know, certain amount of crowd, you know, the number of people that are there watching you and in this, you know, in a high school gym. And now all of a sudden you're playing in Rupp Arena and there's a lot more people there. It's a lot bigger, you know, a lot bigger space, different sight lines and things. What do you remember about that experience of playing in Rupp? And did you notice the crowd once the game started, or did that just kind of fade away and you're just, you know, once you get over that initial kind of excitement and nervousness, then you're just playing a basketball game? What do you remember about that experience?
Yeah. You know, our coaches, you know, I can speak very highly of them. You know, they knew what to expect and how to prepare, you know. So one of the things we did, we were fortunate to be able to practice, at Xavier, you know, the week leading up to the state tournament. So that was very beneficial. I think, you know, just in terms of the backdrop, you know, behind the basket, we were already pretty used to that. To be honest, in terms of focus and noticing, you know, we were so set on our game plan that, you know, I really didn't notice the magnitude of the crowd until, so we, you know, in the state championship game, we came back and won in overtime. You know, we got out to a lead the first 4 minutes, trailed the rest of the game, forced an overtime. And when we made our last bucket in the overtime to put us up eight with about 25 seconds to go, and the gym was just rocking. And I remember looking up and just that's when it all hit me. Like, there's actually 14,000 people here. And, you know, with that and the radio and the stream, you know, and getting 100 text messages after the game, it kind of just all hit me at once at the end. And, you know, it was, you know, what a memory, senior year, a way to go out, you know, very emotional, you know, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears were shed, you know, by my teammates for that. But yeah, kind of at the end is when it all just, boom, hit me at once, and I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah, I could see that. I think one of the things that if you're dialed in as a player, I think that the crowd, you may notice it in warmups, you may notice it when you first come out of the locker room. But once the game started, you know, for me at least, I have found that the crowd sort of faded into the background. And then when the result of the game was clear, then to your point, I think that may be a time where, again, as a player, you're going to notice, wow, there are 14,000 people and I am playing in Rupp Arena. But in the moment, a lot of times I think if you're truly dialed in, it just becomes, I'm just playing a basketball game. And that's probably what enabled you guys to, you know, have the success that you did and win that state championship by practicing at Xavier and kind of putting yourselves in positions to, you know, become familiar with what those scenarios might have looked like. And so that had to be a tremendous thrill to be able to win a state title, and something that obviously can never be taken away from you. So as your high school career is winding down, talk about your decision-making process in terms of where you were going to go to school for college.
Yeah. You know, so I was, you know, a 6'4", undersized center. So I kind of realized, you know, I was going to be limited to, you know, Division threes. And you know, that was primarily the schools that I was looking at. You know, I always said this when I was a senior, and I tell all the guys I'm recruiting now, you know, with college, it's just about fit. You know, and for me, looking at the, you know, first off, the education, that's ultimately most important. You know, so the school I went to and attended was Wittenberg University, phenomenal school, and business program is very pretty well known in the Midwest. Competitive basketball was my next, you know, factor. Obviously, you know, you could probably hear already, I'm just a competitor and in love with the game. And then the third thing was just the location. You know, Wittenberg's in a great centrally located area, Springfield, Ohio. And that was just about 90 minutes away from Northern Kentucky. So my family was still able to come to games, and I could make it home on holidays and things. So Wittenberg was just the best fit for me after high school.
So what do you remember from an adjustment standpoint when you walk into Wittenberg for the first time? Maybe you play in an open gym or you get to your first practice. What's the biggest adjustment for you going from the high school game to the college game? What do you remember about that time?
So, I think number one, I think this, just the strength and speed, is, you know, something that really can't be replicated very well, in high school. You know, prep schools, I understand you have 4, 5, 6 college players on a team, but I think in high schools, and what a lot of people forget about Division III is, to play Division III, you're usually a top, you know, 1, 2, or 3 player on your high school team. So I think just having the size and speed of all the best, you know, or all of some of the best high school players was the first adjustment. The second thing, just at practices, the efficiency and you know, kind of refusal of the coaching staff to budge. You know, like we would do some time drills, you know, something like a 3-man weave. We called it fly drill. I remember one practice, and you know, we could not make it, you know, 3 trips in 18 seconds or whatever it was,
right?
And we stayed on that drill for, you know, 15 more minutes until the seniors, you know, kind of were given control in that situation and figured it out, and we got it. So that was kind of a good lesson, just that, you know, like I kind of said before, if you're going to go after something, don't settle for anything less, you know?
Yeah. I think that for any high school player that may be listening out there, the adjustment from high school to college basketball, I think you hit it very well in saying that, you know, it's the physicality of the players just from an athleticism standpoint. And then I think also the other piece of it is just the step up in the level of seriousness and just the way that college practices are run compared to the way high school practice maybe run. And so I think your adjustment period was probably pretty typical of most college players. And for anyone who's out there listening, if you are, you know, a high school senior or junior, you're thinking about playing college basketball, keep in mind what Mark just said, that every player who's playing at the college level, regardless of whether it's, you know, junior college, it's Division III, it's Division II, it's Division I, it's NAIA, the level of play, especially today, is so high that, you know, there's a lot of people out there that don't realize how good you have to be just to play at any level of college basketball. And I'm sure, you know, in your current position, obviously you see that with the, you know, the level of player that you're able to, you know, play, coach, and then also compete against day on a day in, day out basis.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And like, you know, I always tell people, you can't teach height and you can't teach athleticism. And, you know, those guys find their way to some level a lot of times.
For sure. What do you remember? What's your favorite? I asked you about your favorite memory from high school. What's your favorite memory from playing college basketball?
You know, on a team level, you know, we took a trip to Canada, which was really cool. Again, you know, just things that people don't know about Division III's. Every 3 years, you know, Wittenberg would take their team to a preseason trip to Canada. And I think they might be switching it up, you know, in the future. But that's something, you know, just a neat experience that you get to, you know, have at Division III. On a personal level, my favorite memory, it would have to be a game in December my freshman year against Denison, where I you know, was the freshman who only had 5 minutes of playing on the whole season, and, you know, foul trouble comes and my number was called and came in, hit two threes, we won by six.
Nice.
Yeah, so, you know, that's kind of just, again, everything I've done in my basketball career, I try to learn from. And, like, you always hear coaches saying all the time, be ready, be ready, be ready. And, like, you really never know when your number is going to be called. And I think, you know, I'd rather choose discipline than regret. You know, I'd rather over-prepare and not get the opportunity than to not be prepared and then fail in my opportunity.
Yeah, that's a great story that I think that as you go on in your coaching career, I'm sure you've already used it with some of your players. And to me, that's one that you'll be able to draw back on 30 years from now in terms of being able to relate to not just players who are the stars or players who are starters, but you can relate that story for every kid who's a member of the team that, hey, if you're ready, you may end up having this opportunity that, you know, for me was one of the highlights of my playing career, that I got the opportunity to come in and make a couple threes and possibly swing a game in our team's favor, even though I was a kid who didn't play a whole lot that particular year. So I think that's a great story that you'll be able to use time and time again throughout your coaching career.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope so. And if one guy is ready because of that, then it's all worth it.
Yeah, for sure. So as you're going through your playing career, when you're at Covington Catholic, when you're at Wittenberg, is coaching on your mind at that point? Or are you still just kind of focused on your playing career, not really thinking about coaching? Or when did coaching get onto your radar of saying, hey, this is something that, you know, I might want to pursue for my career?
It was, again, during my sophomore year at Wittenberg. It's kind of funny. I don't know why, but I remember, you know, my dad and my two oldest brothers, the four of us met at an Indiana Pacers game on a Sunday. You know, Indiana Pacers game, we try to do it every couple of years, just go to one. And I was driving back and, you know, speaking on the phone to my old AAU coach, Mike Price. And he just kind of threw the idea. He said, do you want to help me, you know, coach AAU this year? And, you know, 2 hour drive, I thought about it. I said, yeah, you know, that's something I'm going to try. You know, so I was already getting involved in the AAU circuit. And then after my sophomore year, when my playing career ended, which we can talk about, but, you know, that's when I kind of knew, you know, okay, well, I'm not stepping away from the game. You know, I'm going to find a way, you know, to contribute. You know, everything I talk about is it's team first. It's not about individuals. It's about the team. So I knew I had to find another way to stay in the gym.
So explain about the end of your college career after your sophomore year. Kind of talk about how that plays into your evolution into coaching.
Sure. At the end of my sophomore year, Coach Bill Brown retired from Wittenberg. He was there for over 20 years and still, you know, is by far their all-time winningest coach and, you know, probably top five in Division III. So it was time for him to move on. Matt Croce, current head coach of Wittenberg, stepped in. It was a situation in Division III where we had a lot of guys coming in and, a lot of sophomores. And as a 19-year-old kid, it upset me, you know, it really, you know, affected me. Now it's, I realize that there's nobody that plays forever. But looking back, I probably was too slow on defense, but, I got,
appreciate your honesty, Mark.
Yeah. Yeah. But I got cut from the team. But like I said, you know, I've always been a team first guy. And, you know, I've said, if you can't play, you know, push guys harder in practice. And I said, if I can't push guys harder in practice, you know, then I'll try to do something to make the coaches' lives easier so that, you know, they can give more to the players and to the team. So I kind of just eased into a student assistant role, kind of got my start just doing the behind the scenes work and coordinating team meals and, you know, kind of being the liaison between the coaching staff and the players, just in terms of communication and time changes, things like that. I eased into it. We had a great season and Wittenberg's obviously doing very successful now in Division III and won't be surprised if they're back in the tournament and doing well next year.
So talk a little bit about how it was to go from being a player in the program to being a coach in the program. And one of the things that I think is interesting is, can you talk a little bit about what maybe you found out that the coaching staff did or some of the things that went on behind the scenes that as a player, you know, that stuff was all behind the curtain. You didn't see it. You didn't know about it. You didn't necessarily realize it. And then when you became part of the coaching staff, what were some things that your eyes were open to that the coaches had to do or did that maybe you weren't aware of when you were playing?
A lot. So definitely the biggest one was recruiting. You figure at every practice, at some point, whether the guys are shooting free throws or just showing up, the coaches are all huddled and they're talking. And yeah, a lot of times it's did you see, you know, the NBA game last night or D1, whatever. But recruiting is big, you know, just in terms of organizing. Okay, who are our guys? You know, where do they play? Which coach is available? Different things like that. So that was one of the first things I noticed, that, you know, recruiting is not something you do in the off season. It's not something you do in the tournament. It's something that's happening all year round. So that was the first thing I noticed. I think the second thing was just has to do with kind of, like you said, just behind the scenes, all the preparation that coaches have to do. All the staying late, you know, to do laundry, to upload the game, to input stats, kind of whatever is needed. Especially at small schools at the Division III level, at the JUCO level, there's not as many people on staff. You know, there just aren't. And a lot of responsibilities fall onto the assistant coaches at small schools. I definitely noticed that right away when I transitioned from a player to a coach, just the time commitment.
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people, especially players and fans, I don't think they realize the amount of time that goes into just making sure that, one, sort of the logistics of everything is put together, and then two, especially like, as you described, at a Division III or a Division II even, or JUCO, there's just not as many people as, you know, people think of, okay, I'm at University of Kentucky or I'm at Ohio State, and there's all these assistants and all these different people that kind of each have their role. And then when you get to, you know, a smaller school, that's not the same situation. And so consequently, guys end up having to wear, you know, many hats and having to do a lot of things that need to get done in order for the program to be successful. One of the things that I always find to be interesting is the challenge of recruiting at the Division III level for those coaches, because a lot of times kids that they're recruiting are holding out for an offer from a Division I or Division II or NAIA school that may be able to offer them something. And, you know, Division III coaches are often kind of left to wait. So do you remember anything during your time at Wittenberg, any discussions with the coaches about recruiting and just kind of playing that waiting game for guys to decide whether they were to come to the, you know, the Division III level or waiting out those potential scholarship offers?
Not particularly. You know, to be honest, when I was at Wittenberg as a student assistant, you know, I wish I would have pushed more to get more involved in the recruiting. But, you know, as a junior, you know, my help with recruiting was mostly limited to just kind of sending some letters and, you know, printing out files or whatever. I didn't get to recruit much at Wittenberg, but at the JUCO level, I get that a little bit. I don't know if I should mention it now or wait till we.
No, I think now is a great time to dive into that. So talk a little bit about what the recruiting process is like for you there at a junior college. Cause a lot of people, I'm guessing, aren't familiar with sort of just the whole scenario of junior college basketball. So maybe lay out sort of the landscape of what junior college basketball looks like and then dive into the recruiting piece for us.
You know, so junior college basketball, you know, played by community colleges. So this is a 2-year school, for some people who don't know. And we get, you know, with that, you'll get a lot of non-qualifiers. You know, so when you're recruiting guys, you know, sometimes you have to kind of ask, you know, what are the grades like? Because, you know, you want to know when, if you get these guys, is that some, you know, how much time am I going to dedicate to helping so-and-so with their grades? You know, so that's definitely the number one factor and thing I would say to high school guys most is take care of your grades, because that'll give you a lot more opportunities, even basketball wise, whether you know it or not. You know, but kind of at the JUCO level, you get a lot of, you know, non-qualifier guys. You get a lot of, you know, there are some people who would play in high school and graduate and, you know, go to a big university and go dominate rec ball for a couple of years and, you know, realize that, hey, I want to play, you know, with refs and in front of people. Some of those guys will come back. You know, so it's nice at the JUCO level, you've got a decent mix of 18-year-olds right out of high school, but you also get the exposure of playing against, you know, sometimes 20, 21, sometimes 22-year-olds are playing just as freshmen and sophomores. So that's kind of a neat, unique thing you can get in JUCO with it being a 2-year school, but it's not like you're only playing against freshmen and sophomores or anything like that because the guys are older. You know, from a recruiting standpoint and waiting guys out, yeah, that's definitely an issue. It's what you deal with and it's part of it. And if you want to have good players in your program, you know, that's something that you're going to have to be aware of, that's a very realistic possibility. That's kind of the way I've approached it. I've lost two guys to Division II schools so far. Hopefully no more, but, no, in all honesty, I told both of those guys, you know, I'm happy for you. It's all about the best fit. Cause at the end of the day, that really is what it comes down to, for the best fit for the student first. And then, you know, the program and the school and everything are important as well.
So when you guys sit down and you're just starting your recruiting process for the following season, what does it look like in terms of how many names go on your initial list? And then how do you start to narrow that list down to guys that A, you believe can play at your level, and then B, guys that you think are realistic targets that would actually consider, you know, coming to Clark State? What does that process look like from sort of the beginning where a kid's name first goes on the list until there's somebody that you really think you can target? What does that narrowing down process looks like?
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. You get a big mix of guys approaching you, which is historically how Clark State has been. You know, guys recruiting the school rather than the school recruiting the guys. Those were a lot of the guys that play at the community college level as well. But when you actually are recruiting, you know, it usually starts with a list of about between 30 and 40 guys. I would imagine it varies by program, but for us, you know, about 30, I think we had 33 guys beginning of the high school season. From there, you know, you kind of, I would organize them by high school and try to find a way to get in contact with the coaches, or, you know, somebody I knew at that school or that community. And just, you know, the very first questions are what kind of grades and what kind of kid are they? You know, what kind of kid is he? Is he coachable? Is he going to be a good teammate? And is he going to play hard? You know, those are really the three things that I think are crucial to being a good player. But, you know, so from there, we start with 33. You know, maybe after those calls, not too many drop off usually. You know, maybe it's 25. And then at that point, it's really just start watching and start, you know, getting information from as many people as possible. So, you know, all those coaches that I texted to begin with, you know, keeping those relationships and saying, you know, hey, you know, what days do you guys play this week? Or, you know, okay, you play Friday. You know, I'm in Columbus on Friday. Can you shoot me a text after the game? Let me know how you did. You know, so keeping up with guys on there, just checking the stats. And then, you know, after about the first month or so of games, you kind of start to target your list of who you want to really go after. So we kind of condensed it down to, you know, 20, then 15 guys we really went after. You know, and from there, it's really relationship building. I mean, you want to get guys, you know, as a coach and as a player, you know, having done both within the last 3 to 5 years, it's just about trust. You know, that there has to be this mutual trust between coaches and players, and that starts, you know, by establishing a relationship. And you know, that's kind of what I try to do with the recruiting is just, you know, be genuine, be honest, be real. And you know, try to attract guys that do that as well.
Registration is now open at www.headstartbasketball.com for this summer's Head Start Basketball Camps. We'll be hosting camps this summer in Strongsville, Westlake, Avon Lake, Oberlin, Brunswick, Highland Heights, Mentor, and Hudson. At Head Start Basketball, we care deeply about making a positive impact on the lives of young basketball players, both on and off the court. It's through building strong relationships with our players, parents, and coaching staff that we are able to use the game of basketball to enrich the lives of those we interact with, both inside and outside of our organization. We believe that our attention to detail, our growth mindset, and our commitment to lifelong learning allows us to help our players achieve their fullest potential. We are passionately committed to providing players, parents, and coaches with everything they need to reach their goals. These core values run through everything we do. Check out our website, www.headstartbasketball.com, and discover why you should attend a Head Start Basketball camp this summer. Hope to see you there.
How many times do you see a kid play in person typically for a kid that ends up in your program? How many times are you getting out and seeing them play, whether it's seeing them play an AAU game or seeing them play in high school? What's that number about?
It's hard to say. It's hard to say. It really varies. You know, I've had kids commit that, you know, I only saw them play once and I started reaching out with them. They weren't that high on the list. But just the fact that I saw them one time and knew they, you know, they could come be a good, you know, preferred walk-on spot and push guys and earn some minutes. So, you know, there's sometimes it's that, you know, sometimes we're watching kids 5, 6, 7, 8 times, especially now with the season being over for us, and the high school season, you know, I think we're in regionals here in Ohio now. There's a lot of basketball out there, and if we're not practicing, there's really no reason, you know, for me not to be there. you know, but in general, I guess the range for an answer to your question would be, you know, some guys it's two games, some guys it's six or seven, you know, for the ones you really want to get.
So what's the geographic range for you guys? Like, how far do you travel away from campus to see a kid, to recruit a kid? I mean, obviously we're not talking about the kid who recruits you, but for the kids that you're recruiting, what's your geographic area that you're kind of narrowing down and trying to zero in on?
I don't want to necessarily put a boundary on it, but in terms of the coaches, you know, physically driving and going to games, you know, at our level, it's really just like a 2-hour radius for the most part. We're pretty fortunate being in Springfield. Just a quick plug for Clark State. You know, we're close to Dayton, Cincinnati, and Columbus. You know, are all within an hour and a half or less. So those are the three areas, just because there's so much talent, you know, in those three cities alone that we don't really need to venture too much outside of that radius. But you know, good players are good players, and if I saw somebody that I thought would be a really good fit, and you know, they were in Cleveland, absolutely, you know, I could find the time and make the drive, or you know, find somebody that could get me access to film something. You know, if the players
right.
are
if the opportunity presented itself, understood.
Exactly.
Understood. So let's go backwards for a second, because I don't want to shortchange the process that got you to Clark State in the first place as the youngest coach in college basketball. So talk a little bit about how you got to Clark State, and then we'll continue to dig into kind of your role and some of the things that you're doing there, you know, in your role as an assistant coach there. So how did you get to Clark State?
Sure. So, as I mentioned, after my years as being a student assistant at Wittenberg, I was kind of set on trying to find a graduate assistant job, you know. So summer after my junior year, right before my senior year, I started cold emailing every school in Kentucky, Ohio, and Indiana, you know, just trying to get something at every school at every level. And some of them I got responses and you know, still talk to those coaches. And then Clark State, you know, of all schools, the one that's in the same city as my undergrad, emails me back, head coach Anthony Clemens, and says, you know, grad assistants are nice, but how would you like to be an assistant this year? And I was kind of skeptical, thinking, how is this possible? You know, what's going on here? But, you know, I went and did an in-person interview and got to see the school and, you know, just kind of understand a little more about the JUCO level. I accepted the job, and the rest is history.
So did he know you before you reached out to him? Was he aware of you as a player, as a student assistant at Wittenberg, or was it truly a complete cold call situation and he just needed somebody that, you know, was young and enthusiastic and wanted to be a part of it and wanted to break into coaching? How did he know you before?
No, it was all done through cold call. He said he had somebody else who committed and then dropped out at the last second. You know, so I was just fortunate with the timing that it all worked out. You know, and that's why, again, I tell the Clark State guys that, you know, they're trying to play at the next level. I said, you know, man, you got to reach out to every single one that you would even consider, because you never know. You never know who's going to need you. But yeah, it was 100% cold calling. No prior engagement between us.
Yeah, it's well, you must have been a good letter writer.
Everybody gets lucky.
I think, though, to your point, you know, one of the things that is truly important is those relationships that you build is one. And then I think the second part of it is that you just never know where your opportunity is going to come from. And if you keep plugging away and you keep working hard and you keep doing the things that you're supposed to do, then opportunities tend to come forth for guys that are doing those things. And I think you're a testament to that, that if you put the time in and you're working and you keep going after what it is that you want to do, that you're going to get the breaks. And then as you're in your jobs and you're doing what you're supposed to be doing and you're working hard, you're just continuing to be able to build relationships, which allows you to have the type of success that you want to have. And obviously you guys there at Clark State have sort of turned the program around. So can you talk about where it was when you got there and then where you are now? And then we'll get into some of the things that you're doing in your role as an assistant coach.
Sure. Sure. So we just finished up our second season. So 2 years ago, before new coach Anthony Clemens and myself came in, Clark State was 1-25. Like I said, just a school that, you know, all the players for the most part recruited the school, not the other way around. And it was just time for a change. So the athletic director brought the new coach in and kind of gave us, a lot of free rein, whatever gym time you need. And we'll work the budget as well as we can to get you what you need. And our first year, we finished 8-18, which is okay. But for the first year, without having a chance to really recruit anybody, we did okay. And then this past season, we just finished the year 15-16, just short of doubling our wins. But it's kind of like everything. You just have to learn, learn with it. I think the best way to learn is, for lack of a better term, just to get thrown into the fire. But just working there on trying to change the culture, to a team oriented and garner some community support, and get guys in the gym who want to be there, not just guys who are in college, and happen to play basketball, if that makes any sense. But it's been a great 2 years. Like I said, just trying to turn the culture around there at Clark State.
What was the biggest thing that you had to do in terms of changing the culture? Like, what was something when you two sat down on day one and you said, okay, here's where we want to get to, here's where we are now. What were one or two things from a culture standpoint, not an X and O standpoint, but a culture standpoint that you really felt you guys had to try to instill in the program in order to get where you wanted to go?
This may be a bit surprising, but one of the biggest things we did was just team camaraderie. Just the culture and the guys we kind of had it, some of the guys that were just had very combative personalities, and you can't really blame individuals, who you don't control the environment you grow up in. We had a lot of guys button heads that first year, a lot of guys who were, confrontational and things like that, so kind of what we've tried to do is we have to do things outside of basketball together. That's really, really important, I think, just to a culture, just to having good teammates. So whether it's finding, finding ways to do a team dinner, volunteering at a we did the shoes for the shoeless program, or taking a bowling night, bringing in their Xbox to the locker room, just trying to do something, to get the guys to get along with each other. As simple as that sounds, that was a big challenge in the program. The second thing was this happens at a lot at the JUCO level, but keeping guys eligible. It's kind of hard. A lot of JUCOs deal with it that in December, when first semester grades come out, you might lose half your roster.
That's a little bit of a turnover. That makes for a challenge midseason.
Absolutely. In that first year, like I said, we got hit hard on that. Just being the first year and not really knowing. And, this year we improved upon it. And obviously have more success, but so kind of those two things, just the being a good teammate and keeping guys accountable for their grades were, are two of the biggest challenges, I should say.
So what did you do to change, to address the grade situation that you had to deal with last year to this year? What was the big change you made?
Study tables. I just made the time. I worked with the athletic director and a couple of the academic advisors. I said, this is what I did at Wittenberg. They're a very successful program. What's the closest version of that we can have here? And
you know, the people in the tutoring center are tremendous at Clark State, very willing to work with us. But basically we had it set up where three times a week for 2 hours per session, we have, you know, three sessions of study tables for all athletes, not just basketball. You know, kind of what I did was I stepped up and was the study tables monitor. Got some classroom experience with everybody. And, you know, kind of the big thing I told them was, you know, look, you guys are adults. And if you don't want to do your homework, you don't want to do your grades, that's fine. But you can't distract other people, you know, which unfortunately was a concern. But, you know, doing that, I think, I hope, carried over, you know, to the being a good teammate lesson. You try to instill the ball. But study tables were definitely, you know, the biggest approach to fixing those grades and eligibility issues.
Yeah, if you can get those kids to buy into the fact that they're there for, you know, academics first and basketball second, and by providing them with that opportunity to study with kind of somebody looking over their shoulder, again, because ultimately I think you've said it a couple times, is you want the institution to be a good fit for the kid. And obviously the goal for anybody who's in college is to be able to graduate and move on, whether for your kids to a four-year school, or, you know, if they're going to go out into the workforce after that, you want them to be able to be successful academically first, and then, you know, the basketball piece of it comes second. And so for you guys to be able to do that and kind of turn that around, obviously it helps your basketball program, but more importantly, it helps each of those individual players, students, athletes to have the kind of success that, you know, hopefully they're going to be able to have as they move on into their, you know, adult working life. What would you say is right now your favorite part of the college coaching experience? What have you enjoyed the most about your time at Clark State so far?
I think just being in the gym. I mean, you know, seriously getting to work, you know, with basketball every single day is just such a joy. Even after losses, you know, getting to go back and watch film, you know, and just, I look at it almost like problem solving. You know, we're not guarding ball screens well. You know, why is that? You know, how can we change the way, you know, we're guarding so that we're further up on the ball? What kind of drills can we do for that? You know, just kind of approaching things like that. But, you know, the other big thing, obviously, is the relationships, you know, being around the guys and, you know, after big wins, putting a smile on their face, you know, and you talked about on the podcast a couple times, just how important it is to take moments sometimes and laugh, you know, when things are funny. You know, cause it's serious practice, but you know, at the end of the day, you're getting education. We're enjoying our time playing basketball, you know? So just being around the game and being around the guys, that's really what I enjoy most.
Do you have any squeaky shoes or, shoes that make lots of noise?
I did a Wittenberg though. And I took enough heat from it that I got a new pair of shoes.
There you go. Everybody's got a squeaky shoe story. One of the things that I think is cool for you is not only were you a young coach when you started, and not only were you coming into a program as a new assistant, but you came in and sort of got to set the culture because you and your head coach both came in at the same time. So you kind of were learning on the job together about what it was going to take to be able to be successful. So if you had to look at what you've done so far, and obviously you mentioned two things that, you know, building that team camaraderie and helping to improve the grades so that the kids that you do have as a part of the program stay eligible. But what are some of the things that you've done on the practice floor with the basketball side of it that have enabled you to sort of turn the corner and get the program headed in the right direction?
Yeah. So I kind of want to approach it offense and defense, if that's all right.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I get, maybe it's the same answer for both, but just trying to teach guys to get on the same page. You don't know, you know, what high school programs everybody came from. You don't know, for some of them, you know, when they were last playing high school and when organized basketball. You know, so especially with defense, I kind of, you know, was have more say on the defensive side of things than offense. Defensively, just getting everybody on the same page at all times, you know, whether that's, you know, you got to be in help position. But okay, you know, I know my teammate's guarding a shooter, you know, so I'm going to be prepared to close out on that shooter if he gets caught up in the help, you know, and teaching guys that, okay, you know, if so-and-so gets beats baseline, it needs to be the opposite guy who rotates over, you know, or whatever it is. But, you know, getting the level of communication up, you know, I think a lot of guys, a lot of players watch basketball on TV, you know, watch high levels of basketball. But if you go and you actually sit close to the floor, I mean, it's a chatterbox out there, you know, screen up, cut, interchange, you know, I'm up, go back, all that stuff. So defensively, you know, just getting people on the same page has kind of been the X and O's priority. And then, you know, on offense, you know, trying to explain to guys that you need to be honest with yourself. You know, we mentioned before that at the college level, it's the top, you know, one, two, or three players from most high school programs, you know. So as a result, you know, some of these guys who were number three in high school, number one in high school, might be number three or number four here. So they don't get, you know, 15 shots a game anymore. And for some people, it's hard to realize that, you know, but offensively, at the most basic level, just trying to communicate to guys, you know, we want the best shot for the team, you know, and through that, everybody will be lifted up, rather than guys just doing their own thing and shining by themselves.
Yeah, I think that's a universal challenge for coaches out there, is to get guys to buy into that from an offensive standpoint. I'm curious about what you said in terms of communication on the defensive end of the floor, because obviously every coach out there, I don't care if you're coaching at the youth level or the high school level or the college level, every coach wants more communication from their players out on the floor. So that's something that, you know, you oftentimes hear coaches saying, hey, we want you to talk more, but I'm not sure that coaches always do a great job of explaining to players what that actually means. So how do you guys go about teaching communication and encouraging your players to communicate more out on the floor? Is there anything specific that you guys do? Do you model it? How do you go about teaching your kids to talk more?
So two things basically, and you know, they're pretty interrelated. The first is through, you know, just in the shell, basic shell drill. You know, our philosophy is like, yeah, I get two stops in a row to get out, you know, and similar to my time at Wittenberg, we will stay on that drill until this group of four or five guys gets two stops in a row. You know, so that's kind of one. And you know, after, if they've been on for a while and
they start communicating,
right, the offense keeps scoring, you know, I'll even break it down sometimes to the level of, you know, okay, you know, how did he get to the block? Well, I got screened. Okay, did you call out the screen? Well, I did, but did he hear you call out the screen? No, then you didn't call it out. You know, trying to tell guys that, you know, you have to talk at the team level, not at your own. You know, so that's kind of the hands-on way to do it. And then the second, it's pretty similar, just in film. You know, watching games, it's remarkable how many situations, you know, just through a shell drill, just through you know, different transition drills, you can get the same game actions, you know, and showing guys film and saying, this is the exact thing we practice. You know, you talk in practice, but he gets open here. You know, are you actually talking in games or not? You know, so I think it comes down to what we said at the beginning, just being honest and direct with the guys. At least that's how I approach it. I hope it's been successful. I don't know, but that's how I've been approaching it so far. Just direct, being direct and being honest.
I think that by making it a point of emphasis, which it sounds like that's what you're doing on a daily basis, whether it's through the film work or whether it's out on the practice floor, it's always comes down to, for me, and this is one of the things that as a coach myself that I've always struggled with, is knowing what to put an emphasis on and then keeping an emphasis on that particular team. I tend to be the kind of coach who I get excited about something for a day, 2 days, whatever, and we're really hitting that hard, and then all of a sudden I, you know, see something else, and you know, I'm moving on, and I leave that previous point of emphasis. So it's one of the things that I've always tried to, as I've gotten older as a coach, is tried to become better at making sure that whatever my point of emphasis is, and in this case, talking about communication, that I stay with it day after day after day, because that's really how you ingrain the habit, whatever it is, for getting somebody to do something. It sounds like that's what you guys are doing there at Clark State. Can you talk a little bit about, you mentioned your film work. How much time do you personally, as a coach, as a coaching staff, spend looking at film, and then compare that to, or share with us also, how much time you spend with where your players are sitting down with you and watching film as well?
So, you know, for me, or for the coaching staff, you know, typically for opponents, for conference, you know, for opponents, I try to watch 2 games. You know, usually the second time around, you can get away with a game and a half. You know, being explicit here, you know, watch them twice, just whether it's online or in person, you know, taking different notes throughout that. And then, you know, ideally you want to show that to the, you know, show at least one of those halves, to the team, if possible, if you can fit it in. I think that's pretty beneficial, you know. And then for our own film, you know, after our games, I'll usually watch the game that night and then watch it again before practice. And then, you know, kind of put the practice plan together from there. Sometimes, you know, not for all of our games, but for some of them, the day after a game, I would basically just invite the players, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours before practice, say, hey, you know, I'm in room 128 watching film if anybody wants to come. You know, so we would kind of watch film on ourselves together through that. And then after, you know, some games where guys were logging a lot of minutes, where we traveled far, you know, and practice was just going to be lighter the next day, we might watch film at the end of practice as a whole team together.
So when you're watching film of an opponent, what are the things that you're looking for when you're watching that film? Are you looking for specific actions that they're doing? Are you looking for their best players' tendencies? What are the key things that you want to pull out of that game and a half, 2 games that you're watching of any opponent that you're playing?
I think you hit on a little bit of both. You know, the actions they're doing, I think definitely just, you just sort of, I don't know, at least for me, I just sort of notice it. I don't really have to look hard for it. I think, you know, if a team runs something twice, it just kind of catches my eye, and, you know, write it down and move on. You know, in terms of that, you know, obviously baseline out of bounds, sideline out of bounds, you always want to chart up all of those, you know, just to see what they're running. And then, yeah, with the players and their tendencies, you know, you want to hit everybody, but, you know, you have to start with the leading scorers and the glue guys, which aren't always the same. A lot of times, you know, obviously scores are going to carry, but, you know, there are players you notice out there that, yeah, you know, 6 points a game is okay, but man, he's getting 12 rebounds and 3 blocks. You know, what's this guy got going on? You know, so kind of finding the impact players, you know, at the JUCO level, it's usually about no more than 4 guys that are, you know, really can carry the load for most schools. But, you know, you want to give an overview of everybody, of course. You don't just want to focus on those guys. But, you know, it's probably like 60-40, you know, 60% on players and their tendencies, 40% on the actions.
And then, in terms of what you guys talk about as a coaching staff in preparation for the game and the scouting report that you prepare, how much of that gets shared with your players. So what are they seeing when it's time for them to prep for an opponent? Is it more built into the practice plan, or is it something that you're talking to them specifically about in terms of your next opponent when it comes to what you've pulled off the film?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for the kind of the actions and motions that, you know, are pulled off the film, we do our best to replicate those just throughout practice, you know, whether it be in team drills or breakdown drills, you know, just get, just finding, you know, putting guys in positions that kind of replicate the movements of our opponents. And then for the individual tendencies, no later than 2 days before our game, I would just send out, you know, a scouting report, basically, you know, player's name, number, you know, my notes on them, and then their stats. And then the other things I'd always like to include on scouting report were just general keys to the game, split into three categories. You know, so I'd say Clark State on offense, Clark State on defense, and then overall scout, you know. So under the offensive section, you know, ready for zone offense, you know, ready to run press break. You know, we want to push, but we got to play at our pace. You know, they like to pressure you, stuff like that. Under the defensive heading, you know, we're going to go 22. We're going to press 22 on free throws. You know, key in on number 3, number 5, number 11. Those are the shooters, whatever it may be. And then the overall scout, you know, kind of just the overall keys. You know, we got to win the rebounding battle. We got to win the 50-50 balls, little things like that. So to answer your question, during practice, the X's and O's movements, and then just, you know, giving on the physical scouting report for the tendencies.
Gotcha. So you're keeping it fairly simple for them when they're getting that scouting report in their hand. You're keeping it simple so that they can focus in on some of the key things that they need to think about, both in terms of what you're going to do and also in terms of what your opponent's going to do. You're not trying to overwhelm them with way too much information.
Exactly. And you know, with the defense, with most of basketball, I think it's just muscle memory, you know, and if we work on being in the right positions, that should alleviate, you know, or disrupt their offense already. And then the personal tendencies, you know, that's for our guys who are able to take on more information and really apply that consciously during the game.
So I want to ask you this question, and that is, what is the most surprising thing that you have to do in your role as an assistant basketball coach at Clark State that the average fan, listener, parent, player might not be aware of that you have to do?
Wow, that's a great question. It's hard to say, because I do a lot of strange and different things, but probably the helping out with the athletic department would be the thing people don't know about. So our athletic department at Clark State is our athletic director. And that's it.
So him and his staff is a misnomer.
Right. Absolutely. You know, so helping him out, you know, whether that's uploading the girls' game and stats, you know, in addition to ours, and you know, I'm kind of experienced in graphic design, so, you know, making graphic designs for obviously for our team, for the girls' basketball team, for the baseball team. You know, I'm savvy on the webs, you know, doing the athletics website as a whole, you know, kind of just general behind the scenes stuff that I think at a bigger school, you've got full-time people to do that. Whereas at a school like Clark State, you know, a lot of small schools, if you want to get that done, it's on you. We just, you know, don't have the people to do it yet. But yeah, that's probably the most surprising, just the background media work that goes into it.
All right. I want to start wrapping it up, Mark, by asking you one final question. And that is, what are you most looking forward to next season as you move into this summer and on into next fall? What's the most exciting thing that you feel is coming down the pike for Clark State basketball?
Man. I think just the continued improvement. I tell people, you know, our first year, you could take a 4-game losing streak and we would lose every single game by 15 or more. You know, the next year, take those same 4 games against those same 4 teams. So this past season, you know, we'd win 2 of them and one of them we'd lose in overtime. The other one we'd lose by 10. You know, so I think kind of the next step is those same 4 games, you know, is we're going to win 2 of them pretty handedly. You know, one of them is going to be a close win and that other one, you know, win or lose is going to be competitive. So I think just for Clark State, continuing to improve, continuing to take those steps, and you know, as individuals, continuing to grow and become better teammates and you know, start to really, you know, for the players, start to understand themselves and understand, you know, how the limit of their abilities, what the limit really is, and, you know, so that they can maximize their potential, help the team, and for the players, you know, hopefully from JUCO, get to the highest level possible.
Yeah, I think that's an exciting goal to have for both your program and for the kids that are a part of it. Before we wrap up here, Mark, if you wouldn't mind sharing your contact information so that people who have been listening to the podcast can reach out to you if they have questions or just want to get in touch with you. And then if there's anything that we didn't hit on that you want to share as your parting shot, you can go ahead and do that as well.
Okay. So contact information, email and text are both good. My phone number, 859-760-9986. Not sure if you'll keep that in.
Yeah, we'll put that. We'll put everything in the show notes. So we'll have it here in the audio, and we'll also put it in the show notes so that people don't have to be furiously scribbling it down as you're talking.
Sure. Okay. And then email address, schultm95@gmail.com. Twitter, Coach Mark Schult. And then my blog website is markschultgetahead.com.
Please check it out. I will be at the Final Four this year. If anybody would like to meet up, feel free to reach out.
Perfect. So anybody who's out there, if you've been listening to the show and you want to reach out to Mark and pick his brain about anything that he's talked about tonight, that would be tremendous. And to everybody out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our Academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have 4 different class skill levels for boys and girls, ages 4 and up. All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.headstartbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.